I'll just read these because there's a few of them. Translation: the dramatic actor Madan Mohan has opened a shop of scents that attract the women of the world to be his customers. He delivers the scents freely, but they make the women all so blind they cannot find the path returning home. Text 99. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mind thus stolen by that scent, ran here and there like a bumblebee. He ran to the trees and plants, hoping that Lord Krishna would appear, but instead he found only the scents of Krishna's body. Text 100. Both Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Rai sang to the Lord, who danced and enjoyed happiness until the morning arrived. Then they derived a plan to revive the Lord to external consciousness. Text 101. Thus I, Krishna Das, the servant of Sri Rupa Goswami, have sung of four divisions of the Lord's pastimes in this chapter. The Lord's devotion to his mother, his words of madness, his rubbing his face against the walls at night, and his dancing at the appearance of Lord Krishna's fragrance. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says that he has been able to describe these four pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by the blessings of Srila Rupa Goswami. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was not actually a direct disciple of Srila Rupa Goswami, but he followed the instructions given by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He therefore acted according to the instructions of Rupa Goswami and prayed in every chapter for his mercy. Omagyatavinandasya jananjana salakaya chaksu vimilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Lena Bhutili Swayam Rupa Gadam Ayam Dadati Swabhadantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhaktarinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya's demonstrating pastimes of a different nature than what we are accustomed to understanding what are actually pastimes. For us, reading these pastimes, it is an opportunity for us to decide in our own life as to what to do or what not to do. Lord Chaitanya specifically came in the mood of a devotee, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, who's the topmost devotee. But not just to experience the mood of Srimati Radharani, but also to give us some indication on how we can become transformed from mundane consciousness and activities to transcendental, liberated activities. Sometimes when we read these pastimes, we can get a little bit mind-boggled because they're so high. They're of such a higher nature that we cannot relate that this is something that we can personally experience. So we tend to brush it aside as being, well, this is Lord Chaitanya. What really do we expect? Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore these experiences that he's having, well, it's not so difficult for him. And therefore, for me to attain the same, that's not possible. So this, at least I think I can speak for myself. When I read these kind of pastimes, I'm thinking, well, this is so high. It is so high that how can I possibly reach this same height, level of transcendental activities. And mainly is, of course, it's because we've been brought up in a certain way. Throughout history, it's been more or less the same program, no matter who was leaders of countries or who was logicians and professors and teachers. Whatever they said and did included the activity of sense gratification. And therefore, we have associated with that. And therefore, it's very appropriate for most 99.9% of the population to, alongside with their domestic affairs and alongside with their responsibility, the next prominent activity is sense gratification. Is Lord Chaitanya giving me some transcendental experiences here? How wonderful. You have an hearing aid. Does she have an hearing aid? So, sense gratification has been the sum and substance of our life, and therefore our senses have become blunt. Rishabh Dev, when he was instructing his sons, he mentions this, Nunam Pramatta Kurate Vikarma. When a person considers sense gratification the goal of life, then he becomes mad and engages in all kinds of activities. And we don't have to look very far to see how that is becoming more and more prominent within today's society. In fact, the enjoyment nowadays is coming to the point of it has to be sensational, otherwise it's not worth doing it. So instead of engaging one sense at a time, we tend to engage all five senses at one go. Then that's the equivalent of modern day sense gratification. We have seen the picture, yeah? I think in one of our books we have that picture of a person who's engaging all his senses at once and gratifying. So that's a picture, but it has become reality. Especially I've noticed in this country that sense gratification is considered very, very high on the agenda. And unless it has some real juice, which means, well, let's do them all at once. Because even the animals, they tend to take one sense at a time. So when you take all senses at one time, then in one sense we could say that we're less than animal. It's less than animal. And the end result is that our whole consciousness becomes dull, our senses become blunt. And there's different descriptions of this written in the Bhagavad Gita. It's explained that the senses are like fire. A fire consumes. It will consume and consume and consume. It doesn't matter how much you put on the fire. You may put petrol on the fire, you may put water on the fire, but after some time the fire is going to say, we want more, give me more. So you put more coal or more fuel on the fire, and then again after some time we want more. The senses have become like that, or are like that. We want more, and we won't wait for it, we want it now. So that is the mantra. That is the mantra for most people. We want more, we want more, we want more. We want it now, we want it now, we want it now. It's not a question of waiting. We want it right now. It's also explained that the senses, they're so strong and impetuous that it forcibly carries away the mind of even of a man who is trying to discriminate. So even we who are practicing spiritual life, we understand that the senses need to be controlled. But sometimes even for a practitioner in spiritual life, you can be dragged away by simply one of the senses. You can be dragged away from his meditation and practices. It is explained that while contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment. From attachment, lust develops. From lust, anger arises. From anger, bewilderment of memory. When memory is lost, one falls down, completely falls down. There's no any longer no intelligence. The purpose of uncontrolled senses is to drag the intelligence down and down and down. So whereas before the intelligence, you could say like a calculator, you could calculate nicely as what to do and what not to do, when the senses are fully blunted, when you've blunted those senses to the max, then there's no even question of calculating with the intelligence. The intelligence is lost. And one falls down completely to to a sense of dullness. So therefore, it's also explained that the senses are like snakes or serpents, and the only way you can overcome the bite of a serpent is to take out the fangs. So when you take the fangs out of a snake or a serpent, then there's no harm. So this Krishna consciousness is just like that. We have decided that, and yes, our senses are like snakes. They're not helping us at all. So through the practices of Krishna consciousness, we're removing those fangs on a day-to-day basis. It may not come quickly, but over a period of time, gradually, we will win over those senses. The Mayavadis, they consider everything false, so therefore they don't want anything to do with the senses. My senses are false, therefore I have nothing to do with them. And then you have the yogis who say, well, these senses need to be restrained, that's the word, restrained. So they go into meditation. Through their meditation, their aim is to restrain the senses. However, the bhakti yogi, the devotee, his program is to use the senses in Krishna's service, yukta vairagya, that even the senses in the mind and the body, although inert, consisting of inert matter, can be used in Krishna's service and ultimately become illuminated, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, just like a tortoise. Tortoise's limbs go inside the body, so our senses can become illuminated. This is our program, illuminating the senses, controlling the mind and illuminating the senses through the process of bhakti yoga. So let's take the senses one by one. As I explained, that the tongue, first of all, is the most voracious and difficult to control. And the tongue has two functions. What are those functions? Huh? Eating and speaking, yes. So regarding eating, it's explained that those persons who eat bhoga, they're actually eating sin. And by eating sin, again, our consciousness is dragged down. Those devotees who eat prasadam, just by eating prasadam, they're relieved of sin. This is interesting that in our process, simply by eating, we're performing yoga. Each time we sit down and take prasadam, that is a yoga activity. That is an activity of relieving the innumerable sin that's within us. So therefore, it's a yoga activity. I mentioned in my last class. I mentioned in my last class that somehow in the beginning of Krishna consciousness we should eat that much prasad that we walk away like a duck from the prasadam hall. That was Prabhupada's instruction, that your senses are so blunt that, okay, well, at least start by taking as much prasad as you can. I remember before I joined the temple, I tried to get to India, but I got as far as Afghanistan. And because of associating with non-devotees, I had already given up taking drugs, but because of associating with the hippies again, so then I started taking drugs again. And I was in this hotel in Kandahar, so close to India, but I got trapped, I got stopped by sense gratification. And it was so bad that one morning I got up and I looked at one rat running around, and I realized that according to the Krishna conscious philosophy, I could even become a rat like that in my next life. And I got so paranoid that I decided to turn back. And I went all the way back to Europe, and when I got to Munich, I was so eager to reconnect and associate with the devotees. And I put my bag in the left luggage, and I was convinced there must be some devotees in this town. And sure enough, after 5 minutes of walking down to the town center, there was the Harinam party. And within that Harinam party, there were quite a few personalities that we know today. Satchinandana Brahmachari was there. Who was Satchinandana Maharaj? No. Avinash Chandra was also there. His name is now Bhakti Bhushana Swami. And Avinash Chandra Brahmachari was also there, who is now Bhakti Vai Bhava Swami. Is that right? Bhakti Vai Bhava. So they were there, and they invited me back to the storefront, which you can imagine, it was just a total relief. And I recall this day very well. The next morning when I got up, there was the morning program, and then there was the prasadam time. And I saw something very astonishing. I could not believe my eyes. But it was something that went on in those days in the little storefronts. The prasadam was being served. Everyone was being served prasadam, but Satchinandana Brahmachari, he got something a little extra. And what he got was a whole pot of halava. And it was right beside him. It was a pot which was not used for cooking. It was just meant for giving it to the person who was the best book distributor or magazine distributor the previous day. Whoever distributed the most, that was their reward. A big pot of halva for breakfast. And I was thinking that, well, he's bound to serve it out to the other devotees too. He's distributed it to everyone. But no, he didn't. He had the whole pot for himself. Needless to say, he didn't make it on Sankirtan that morning. But it was the norm in those days that was your reward. But this was also Prabhupada's instruction that in the beginning, you should eat as much that you walk away like a duck. I was watching a duck yesterday. There's quite a few of them here. And I don't even know if you can imitate it without taking lots of prasad. But once you've taken lots of the prasad, it's not so difficult to imitate a duck. And in the olden days, our feasts were just like that. They were quite a performance to actually take a Sunday feast in the old days. It was a major feat. A relishable one, because there were so many nice preparations. But the most difficult thing was getting up. We would tend to lie around a little bit and laugh and joke for half an hour before we dared to try to get up. But this is good, because whereas the senses previously were blunt, by taking prasad they become illuminated. Very, very essential part of our devotional practice. And not only just in the younger days or in the beginning days, but I'm 38 years in the movement, and it's the same today. You may control yourself a little bit. You wouldn't sit and eat a whole pot of halva, but many times when I'm out traveling, and a lot of times you have to just purchase things from the superstore, and you make your little offering, but it's nothing in comparison to taking prasad in the temple. You know, who can compare with the prasadam that you get here in Bhaktivedanta Manor after it's been offered to the deities? You put it in your mouth and you realize, this is different. And you start relishing. It's not like a meal. It's time for lunch. It's not time for lunch. It's not time for breakfast. It's time to relish Krishna's prasad. And by relishing Krishna's prasad, then the tongue starts to get a little bit satisfied. And the other purpose is talking. We like talking. We have been brought up in a society of talking. If we don't talk, then what is the point? We must talk. Whatever we talk, it doesn't really matter. And we'll drink something so we can talk even more. So we can talk all night until the early hours of the morning, talking. Prabhupada said, better practice mona vrata than talk. Mona vrata is a practice sometimes in India. Not so much in this day and age, but previously there was a practice called mona vrata. Nowadays they use blackboards to communicate, They cannot resist, I want this. Please get it. Please. But real mona vrata, you don't have a blackboard and chalk. It means you just keep quiet. Of course, our mona vrata is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. That is real mona vrata. Because we use the tongue. We need to use the tongue because the tongue is restless. So to artificially stop talking is not an easy practice. And it's certainly not a practice that is feasible, advisable in this day and age. So let's continue talking, but we'll talk about Krishna, we'll chant Hare Krishna. And the wonderful thing about chanting, when you start to chant, Krishna's personally dancing on your tongue. It's almost like Krishna saying, wow, it's about time too. Where have you been all your life, all these lives? But I'll help you out. I'll give you a little bit of juice here. I'll let you experience what is this nectar of my holy name. And that's usually the experience we all get when we first start chanting. Krishna's personally dancing on our tongue. And there's really nothing you can do about it. And if you combine those two together, and this was my personal experience, I know I've said this before, but I like talking this story because it is the sum and substance of our life, is taking prasad and chanting Hare Krishna. So when I was coming to the temple, I wouldn't do anything else but eat prasad. I had no interest for philosophy, and I had definitely no interest for this kirtan that was going on. To me, that was just a waste of time, fanatics jumping around. But there was no question of the prasad being wonderful and delicious. And so therefore I used to come every Sunday to the love feast, without a question. No. Of course, I would go to the roundhouse too. I don't know if that place is still open, but that was the place where you went in London to get your full dose of sense gratification, the roundhouse. So after the roundhouse, then I would go to the temple. And then, of course, with my blunt senses, they would suddenly become illuminated by taking prasadam. And it went on like this for quite some time. And then one devotee, he picked up on the thing that I really liked, and that was taking prasad. So he invited me to come to lunch every day for lunch. And that was okay. That was fine for me too. And this went on for at least 3 months. And then one day, I was coming from the temple back to where I was living. I was on the top of a double-decker bus, and something very strange happened. I was thinking this would be just a normal journey through the streets of London. So I was looking out the window, and suddenly Hare Krishna. 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 Krishna Krishna. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So I went back to the temple the next day and I told the temple president, I have a problem. I have a serious problem. Hey, oh, what is your problem? Well, I keep chanting your mantra and I cannot stop. So then he smiled and he said, do you have any idea what you've been eating the last 3 months? I said, well, it was just great food, that's it. He said, it's called prasad. Prasad is Krishna. Krishna is prasad and prasad is Krishna. Krishna has now appeared on your tongue because your tongue has been purified by prasad. Hari Bol. Don't worry about a thing. Just keep coming and taking prasad. And that was it. So Krishna introduced me to the Hare Krishna mantra. And we know what it's like. It's like, wow, yeah, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare. And it can go on like that for several months, maybe 6 months, maybe even a year. Really fired up. Krishna's still there, dancing on the tongue. Wow, man,
mantra key.
Mangalarya key. Book distribution key. See, victory to all these activities. But then one day Krishna jumps off the tongue. This is the test. We've had a taste, now Krishna is giving you an examination. Can you still chant Hare Krishna? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna. It becomes a little bit more difficult. Getting up for Mangal Arati is a struggle. Going out trying to deliver the conditioned souls or help them or assist them in their spiritual life also becomes difficult. We suddenly lose the taste. What to do? What to do? That's a question. Anyone has an answer? What to do? You lose the taste. You had the taste and you lose it. Do we turn around and say, okay, it didn't work? It worked for some time, but no longer. No, we carry on. We have no taste, but we carry on. Some days we will get the taste back, and some days it will disappear again. But these are the two activities we engage the tongue. Taking prasad and chanting Hare Krishna and discussing Krishna Katha. The interesting thing about chanting is that chanting produces more chanting, even if we don't have a taste. Chanting produces more chanting. Rupa Goswami explained that I only have one mouth and I only have two ears. He said, I want, in order for me to actually relish the Krishna, I desire, what is it, one? He said, 1 million mouths and 1 trillion ears. Because the nectar of Krishna's holy name is so profound that this one mouth and two ears is not enough. Who is this creator, Lord Brahma? I desire more mouths, more tongues and more ears. So then I can really relish. Do we desire like that? No, because even with one mouth and two ears, we haven't got a taste. So therefore, we just continue. But this point is that chanting produces chanting. When we chant, the more we chant, the more we want to chant. You may one day have an experience of, sometimes you can go to these seminars. In fact, Satchinandana Swami does 5-day seminars. And the last day, the workshop is to chant 64 rounds. Now, to chant 64 rounds, it literally takes you all day. But that's the workshop. You're not allowed to talk anything else but the holy name. And some devotees who have been through this experience, they talk about how, because you're allowed to take prasad in between, so they're taking prasad, but in between they're saying Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, because they can't stop. It's addicted. By the end of the day, again, they've already chanted 64 rounds, but they don't want to stop. They will like to carry on more and more and more. The only thing that stops you is tiredness. You're a little bit tired, so you've got to rest the body. So this is a test for us in our japa. we can examine ourselves. How eager are we to put our bead bag down after chanting 16 rounds? If we're really eager to put that bag down and say, well, that's over with. I'm glad that's over with until tomorrow. But I'm glad it's over with today. If we're thinking like that, then it means that our chanting is not very sincere. It's not. There's no devotion. There's no... But if we are actually chanting our 16 rounds and we come to the 16th round, we finished it, and we think, wow, this is so nice. This is really giving me pleasure. Let me chant an extra round just so that I can show Krishna how much I relish chanting. But we may not be at that stage yet, but we could come to that stage. We should not really have any doubt that that is possible. The taste will come, because that's the nature of the holy name. So then we're coming to the sense which is mentioned in this verse today, smelling. Lord Chaitanya is smelling the fragrance that's coming from Krishna's body. Oh, I'm going over time here. I didn't realize it. I should stop. Yeah. I'll stop. Yeah, no, I don't want to go over time. Anyway, in conclusion, we have senses, we have a mind, we have a body. If we can use that in Krishna's service, then we'll find that the body, the mind, and the senses become illuminated, peaceful, transcendental, and then we can use which belongs to Krishna, body, mind, and senses in his service, and we'll be satisfied and peaceful. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Gaur Nitai ki, Nitai Gaur Prem Ananda Hari Hari Mohan.